You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 6 August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Derek Jansen van Rensburg on markets as the top 40 closed at a high for the year. We've got Dr. Leila Faree, JSE CEO, on their results. And then a different take on prescribed assets with Alexander Forbes Investment. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: 446 million in rates relief for Johannesburg residents and businesses. And from Business Day, SA mineral exports rebound strongly in June despite COVID-19. Morning markets: the US was green, S&P up 0.6%, Nasdaq up 0.5%. Asia mixed, Sydney up 0.4%, Tokyo off 0.3%. Commodities also mixed. Platinum up 2.2% at $995. Gold flattish at $2,044. Rand 17.33 against the dollar. And the top 40 opening call looking for a red opening, about a third of a percent down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Derek Jansen van Rensburg, Portfolio Manager at Anchor Capital. Derek, morning. Appreciate your time. Quick chat. Top 40 closed yesterday. We had a strong day on our market, and it closed us at the high for the year. I mean, we can spin it 100 ways that it's crazy, but it is what it is, driven predominantly by Naspers process and, of course, our mining stocks. And truthfully, as an investor on the JSE, I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, there's quite a strong faction in our market at the moment where you do need to kind of separate your old Bellwether SA Inc. story. And then obviously you've got your old school mining sector, which has obviously got global presence in a lot of these mining companies, mm-hmm. the Billitons and the Anglos, coupled with some strong commodities, and then always coming to the party your Naspers and process. So, as you said, I'll take it. I think as we spoke previously last week or the week before, it's been all about the precious metal stocks, you know, the big gold miners, big strong trading statement coming out of Gold Fields yesterday, adding some buoyancy to all the gold miners, and obviously the gold price pushing to 2045, plus or give or take. So I think everything is still very much in favor of precious metals to continue kind of their strong move to the upside. Obviously, in the short term, you might get a breather, but I certainly think that we're probably going to see some very strong trading statements coming out of the other big mining stocks, being the Harmonies, Anglo Golds, and even some of the palladium and platinum players probably going to produce some very good, strong, stellar earnings.
Yeah, I mean, that Goldfields update, I mean, we expect it, right? Gold's doing great. Of course, the key point to me was not the massive increase in HEPS and everything. That was to June. I mean, since June, gold's up another, sort of 10%. In other words, if gold stays where it is, the next update's going to be, frankly, markedly better still.
Absolutely. And I think what you've got to kind of pencil in is that there's a gearing effect in a lot of these gold miners, where if you do get a 5% move in the gold price, well, that's going to stem through to even stronger earnings for a company like the Gold Fields or the Harmony or any of the equity players. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly some leverage to the upside where, 3 or 4% upside translates into, kind of 8 to 12% increase in earnings and HEPS numbers. So if they can just continue to control their costs. Now, my big concern is at this stage of the game where you do start making these short-term super profits on the back of stronger fundamentals, you just don't go out and look for ways from an acquisition perspective to start acquiring other companies and looking to, bolster production by looking at some of the smaller players, etc. So I think if they can just play on their debt, stick to their guns, the value is probably a good case, point in case in terms of how they've grown their business from the palladium side of things. Focus, pay down debt, and lock in super profits. I think there's a strong fundamental case for it.
Yeah, and please don't go and do corporate activity. I hear you on that. Impact results, I mean, obviously hit hard by the lockdown. They weren't in lockdown. They're essential service. But of course, their customers were. Their customers are quick service restaurants and the like. So numbers, frankly, a little bit ugly, but it impacts a really quality company. Do these results give you pause? Does it give perhaps opportunity, something worth looking at?
So, yeah, I agree with you. Very good quality business. Operates in quite a niche space and got quite a significant market share in that space. So, you know, I do like the business, but just really you've got to look at it from a bird's eye perspective and just, you know, from a macroeconomic perspective. I just don't think that scenario is going to change for some of these industrial South African companies that are you know, doing what they're doing. So I'm concerned about it, to be honest, just from a macroeconomic perspective. I don't think we have the economic activity to warrant growth, and we know that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as long as there's no GDP growth kind of coming down the line in the sort of short to medium term, I would say you've got time to buy it. You know, I wouldn't rush into it. I think to keep an eye on it, as I said, it's a good quality business. They're probably going to consolidate and just kind of sit and do very little for a while.
Yeah, my grandfather taught me markets. He always said, packaging and logistic companies, you want to buy them when there's GDP growth. At the moment, there's no GDP growth. Not here, not anywhere. Derek Jantzer from Rensburg, Portfolio Manager, Anchor Capital. Appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Dr. Leila Faree, she is the CEO of the JSC. They had results out late yesterday afternoon. Leila, morning, appreciate your time. Results 6 months ending June, a record quarter for the JSC. Revenue and headline earnings up 22%. Record volumes going through with March setting record after record. How have volumes held up post the period? Looking at July and into early August, I'm imagining probably still elevated, but not at those record levels we saw in March as markets have calmed down a bit.
Well, Simon, surprisingly, July is typically a holiday month for the Northern Hemisphere. And we suspect that that's not happened this year with COVID. And so for the month of July, trading was up over 20% and volumes were up 64%. On July 2019. We are off a low base and we are off a normal seasonal summer base, of course. So the average daily value traded for the 7 months, including July, was 3% higher than 2019. I thought that volumes and values would taper off quite substantially mm-hmm. after the hyperactivity we saw in March. Remain elevated.
I mentioned, you know, revenue up, headline earnings per share up, both of them up 22%. Costs were up 20%, but a lot of them going through them are sort of one-off costs. In other words, they're in the base you know, going forward. There's a lot of IT there, but I mean, in essence, the JSC is a fintech. IT is at the heart of what you do. Can we expect those costs to probably come down as they sort of are a lot of one-off in the numbers?
Mm. Absolutely. So the one-off numbers relate to COVID-related costs. Obviously, I'm sure all companies are experiencing these balances rising as a result of COVID and a couple of executive changes. In the mainstream, we are very cost-focused. Tech is in our DNA, and we will always invest in tech, and particularly looking in the future at future generation tech. Are well managed. It's a very important focus. And importantly, our EBIT margin has increased. Mm-hmm. So even though our costs were up, our revenues were up more, and we've been able to manage that dynamic very effectively.
The one surprise to me in the results was the derivative earnings, and they were up sort of low single figures, aside from the interest rate derivatives. And I was scratching my head, but is it, I mean, we see a lot of off-market derivative trade, most notably CFD. The hedging will happen in the JSC, but the derivative is off-market. Is that part of the reason why there was lower increases? I would have expected, you know, particularly on the index side and on the equity side, side for derivatives to have done a lot better.
Yes, so bond derivatives were up substantially in value traded. I think it was 27%, in fact, our interest rate derivatives. And equity derivatives were down slightly in the actual value traded, but we saw an enormous, I think what obviously happened as companies were starting to retract their dividend declarations as the crisis unfolded, that obviously affected values and fundamentally dislocated equity derivative traders' ability to support price, because those dividends that were previously declared were uncertain. Lots of movement into hedging and into more exotic type of instruments.
Yeah, and it makes sense on the interest rate, because we had massive movements both on, you know, sort of MPC level, but of course bonds at the same time. You know, we forget that we actually got downgraded to junk in March. That seems like a lifetime ago and almost not important. Your systems worked absolutely 100%. You know, we went into lockdown. We saw those volumes peak. The systems continued to work. A lot of your team were working remotely. How much of your team is still remote, or are you back in the offices there in more Street?
Well, I am really pleased with the performance of both our staff and the market. Most people are still working from home. Very few people are going into the office, and it's quite extraordinary when you think that we had our highest value and volume day ever on the JSE on the 24th of March. We had 750% increase in circuit breakers, and yet this was all done from home. In addition to keeping the markets operating, what is particularly pleasing is we've been able to implement a number of projects which were not put on hold as a result of the crisis. And so we're going to implement the upgrade to a large-scale change on our trading engine at the end of August. And that is an enormous project across the industry. And we're very grateful to the industry for equally they're ready. But the team has held out well. And I think, generally speaking, we've withstood the dynamics of the pandemic, and we are geared for change. And so going forward, I think that we are well positioned for any other structural changes or disruptions that we see in the market.
Yeah, it's still amazing. Everyone just goes home, carries on working, and everything does just work. In the olden days, back in the 90s and 80s, open outcry, this would have been absolute chaos. Leila Fourie, CEO of the JSE, appreciate your early morning. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chilling now with Janini Slowski, Head Investment Consulting, Alexander Forbes Investments. Morning, appreciate your time. You were having an online, of course, event yesterday talking around prescribed assets. There's been a lot of debate, particularly down at sort of what I would call the tail end, the alternative products. Should we sort of add some of the Reg 28 rules to include sort of broader definitions? Your concept here is really, yes, there's prescribed assets work, but they're not perhaps the appropriate way for addressing this. And this isn't an anti-South Africa thing. This is just saying we can be perhaps cleverer in the process of Reg 28 and prescribed assets.
Agreed. Thank you very much and good morning. So what we'd like to put out there always is that the concept of prescription is in principle bad, because if you have to prescribe something, it suggests it's not what the investor would choose to invest in by their own assessment of risk and return. Whereas if you have investments that are attractive in terms of risk and return, investors will queue up to invest in them. There's no need for prescription. So you always come back to that basis that if you're having to prescribe, by implication, there's something wrong with the investment.
Yeah, I take that point. I mean, and what you're talking about is, rather than prescription, I mean, you use the phrase impact investing, and you know, it can be still aligned to development. It can be, but sort of voluntary in that sense. There is a lot out there. I mean, the comment that you've found sort of some 200 investments, you know, 2.1 trillion to be invested in it. There are investments out there, but perhaps that prescription is frankly preventing the ability to inject investment into it.
Exactly. And I think we're all extremely conscious and every day getting more conscious of the impacts of COVID-19, that we're going to have to do a massive investment back into the country to try and get growth going, to try and get jobs going, to try and get the tax revenues coming in to pay off debt and so on. And what's absolutely critical for that is infrastructure because of the multiplier effect, which is why we're so supportive of the Sustainable Infrastructure Development Initiative, which is the $2.1 trillion coming out of the infrastructure office in the President's office. So this is exactly what's needed to get the country going. The $2.1 trillion is massive. It is way bigger than any pension fund industry could support, mm-hmm. which you do need to attract international investors and new investor bases. And the principle of prescription would put investors like that off. We're competing against other economies across the world that also want to do infrastructure spend. So the main message is make those infrastructure investments attractive in terms of risk return and make the overall environment investor friendly so that many investors will want to invest. Not just pension funds without prescription, but also an international investor.
Yeah, in a sense, get people queuing up to invest, greater, you know, more demand than there is supply. And you mentioned that infrastructure, that multiplier effect. I mean, if I'm understanding you correctly, there's two wins here. The one is, obviously, your investors are going to make a decent return, and that's why they're investing with yourselves. But secondly, it benefits the economy because it gives us that infrastructure. It gives us those jobs. It gives us better roads and dams, which is good for economic activity. So the country wins, and that naturally flows back to your investments. So, you know, it's the cliche, but it's the sort of double win-on-one process.
No, agreed. And essentially, the multiplier effect comes from the fact that if you build roads, then people will grow crops and take their crops to market.
Mm-hmm.
If you have electricity and infrastructure, people will build manufacturing factories, and then you'll have jobs and then you'll have more income. So that's the key multiplier effect, infrastructure that you call to the recovery of the economy like ours.
And so if we loop back to the beginning, I mean, the sense is that this is not a statement of we don't want to invest in South Africa. We absolutely do. You just want the right playing field. And I liked your point. If we're being prescribed to do something, it implies it's bad. There's great opportunity out there. Alexander Forbes, on behalf of their clients, is keen to get involved. You just want the flexibility to make those choices and to make those investments attractive, not only for locals, but for foreigners who would obviously bring hard currency.
Agreed. And we are all absolutely aligned behind that. I think the original discussions around prescription have been focused on wanting to develop the economy. We're 100% backing that. We just said doing it in the right way will mean you'll get win-win situations as opposed to things going wrong for investors forced to invest into something that's not right for them.
No, I like this. I think it's a great conversation. Prescribed assets, not so sure about that. Do we need development and investment into our economy? Of course we do. Janina Slavsky, Head Investment Consulting, Alexander Forbes Investment. Appreciate your time. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. And, of course, podcast where all good podcasts are found from 7 a.m. And you'll find that podcast MoneyWeb as well. Chat to us on the social media, Facebook, Twitter, hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Koldora, for helping putting the show together this morning. To you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.